On Monday, January 13th, 2014, moviegoers were settling in to watch a 1:20 p.m. showing of Lone Survivor at the Cobb Theater in Wesley Chapel, Florida. The movie had just come out the previous Friday, January 10th, and it was an instant hit, especially among those who served in the military. Among those in the crowd that afternoon was 43-year-old Chad Olson and his wife, Nicole. Chad was a former member of the United States Navy who had served in Operation Desert Storm. He was reportedly excited to watch the film, which was about another Navy man, Marcus Luttrell. Nicole had taken the day off, and the couple decided to drop their daughter off at a local daycare center. Since having her, they had found it difficult to spend one-on-one time together. One row behind them was 71-year-old Curtis Reeves, a retired police captain. He was sitting alongside his wife, Vivian. The two had spontaneously decided to catch the film on that Monday afternoon. They were going to meet their son, Matthew, who also wanted to see it. Before the lights dimmed for the preview, both couples were seated. The Reeves were still waiting for the arrival of their son. But before the movie would begin, words would be exchanged. An argument would break out. Popcorn would be thrown. Gunfire would echo through the Cobb Theater. And someone would be dead. This is Jillian, and in partnership with Law and Crime, you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 199. Sometimes I find it really hard to get motivated to go and work out, whether I feel like I don't have the time or I'm just too lazy to leave my house. But Peloton has changed all of that. The variety of workouts, the many instructors I love, like Ali Love and Cody, and the fact that I can do it all from my home office is pretty great. Peloton instructors are highly trained fitness pros who motivate you through every workout. They have all these unique, fun personalities and have this way of getting you to want to move. And it doesn't matter what your fitness level is. They don't just teach, they motivate. And there are thousands, yes, thousands of live and on-demand classes you can choose from cycling and strength training to yoga and running. Whatever you're in the mood for, a yoga flow class with soul music maybe, or maybe an EDM run, whatever you're into, you will find the perfect soundtrack to go along with your workout. And right now is the perfect time to try out Peloton. The Peloton Bike Plus is now $500 less, its best price yet, including free delivery and setup. And there are more game-changing prices available on the original Peloton Bike and Peloton Tread. Visit onepeloton.com to learn more. When you're a small business, but you're using a big business solution for your banking, you can feel it. It's good enough, you can deal with it, but your dream business checking solution would be built just for you. Well, that's Novo. Novo is powerfully simple business checking. And unlike the traditional banking model, Novo has no minimum balances, no transaction limits, and no hidden fees. Instead of a one-size-fits-all approach, Novo is customized to your business to save you time and free up cash flow with seamless integrations to Stripe, Shopify, QuickBooks Online, and more. Sign up for Novo for free and join the community of over 150,000 fearless small businesses who have found the customizable business checking solution that admires their brave. Sign up for your free business checking account right now at novo.co/court. Plus, Court Junkie listeners get access to over $5,000 in perks and discounts. Go to novo.co/court to sign up for free. novo.co/court. Novo Platform Inc. is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services provided by Middlesex Federal Savings FA, member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. The Olsons were a happy couple. They had been married for 7 years and had a toddler, a 22-month-old. Nicole worked as a manager for USAA since 2007, and Chad worked at Sky Power Sports as a finance manager. One of the perks of Nicole's job was a daycare service that the Olsons often took advantage of, particularly on January 13th, 2014. Nicole would later recount in court that the weather was beautiful that day, and the couple decided to visit a local mall right before the movie.
Well, we knew we needed to stay close, so we decided to see a movie. But we had time prior to that starting, so we decided to go to the Wiregrass Mall and just walk around, do a little bit of window shopping, and just kill some time.
The Reeves were married for over 40 years. They had two children together, Matthew and Jennifer. Vivian Reeves would later testify that she and her husband Curtis were growing old together in the beginning of 2014. She was 67 and Curtis was 71. He was showing signs of aging, Vivian recalled. Back in 2014, she had taken a fall in the couple's house, and Curtis wasn't able to help her get back up. His physical abilities were becoming limited.
Now, let's talk a little bit about what you noticed about your husband. Again, he looks older than when you married him, right?
Yes.
Would you agree that in the last 10 years before 2014, he's looked older and older?
Yes.
Let me ask you this. Has he gained weight since his retirement?
A lot of weight, yes.
Their plans on January 13th weren't set in stone, but they ultimately decided to go to the movies.
It happened in the morning. It was not planned ahead. He had returned with my son from a hunting trip.
Your husband?
Yes.
Okay.
And Curtis wanted to go see the movie, Lone Survivor, because Matt had read the book and then Curtis read it. And it probably originally was going to be just Matt and Curtis, but I wanted to go because it was based on a true story.
Vivian said they would always go to the matinees because they were retired and it was cheaper. They liked showing up early to watch the movie trailers. As the Reeves entered the movie theater that day, popcorn in hand, they began to pick out their seats. They had a routine. Seats near the top, middle aisle. They would split the popcorn bucket. Vivian would bring a Ziploc bag from home and dispense half of the popcorn in it for her personal stash. Curtis would hold the bucket. As they settled in, the room became darker, the speakers louder, and they were still waiting for their son to arrive.
Mr. and Mrs. Olson were in the row in front of us. Mr. Olson was in front of me, and Mrs. Olson was in front of Curtis.
Okay. Now, when you went to sit in your seat, do you notice anything about Mr. Olson?
His phone screen is lit. He's doing something on his phone.
The lights were dimmed at this point. Curtis noticed that Chad was using his phone. The light from the phone was catching his eye line, a pet peeve of his. Nicole recalled the phone being in Chad's left hand near his lap. He was scrolling the screen with his right. Then she noticed a head from behind her come into her peripheral view.
At some point in time, you heard something from behind you.
Correct.
What was said?
A demand to put the phone away.
Vivian would later tell a jury that Curtis leaned forward and started talking with Chad. From her perspective, it was cordial.
Is there any sort of conversation or any kind of communication between your husband and Mr. Olson?
Yes. Curtis leaned forward toward Mr. Olson, and he spoke so softly. I don't know. I thought that I heard the word phone, but I cannot be sure.
And would you say, did you hear really either one of them talk except for maybe the word phone?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you didn't hear either one of them? In other words,
no.
You didn't hear your husband. Did you hear your husband?
I know. I couldn't hear him.
Okay.
Maybe I heard the word phone, but I'm not certain.
Nicole remembered it being more of a demand than a polite suggestion.
What did the man say? What were the words?
Put your phone away now, or something very, very similar to that.
Words to that effect?
Yes.
Okay. Not those exact words.
Right. Not verbatim, but you need to put your phone away or put your phone away.
The message. That's what the message was.
Yes.
She recalled that at that moment, Chad was texting a worker from the daycare service about their daughter. One last update before the movie started. Chad, while still looking at his phone, responded to Curtis saying, "What's your problem? The movie hasn't even started yet." And he continued to text. This set Curtis off, and he stood up defiantly, handed his bucket of popcorn to Vivian, and said, "I'm going to go get the manager." As Curtis made his way past Vivian and down the aisle of seats, she told him, "Let's just move," hoping that they could find a better area to sit and avoid further conflict. She is still unsure if Curtis ever heard her. Curtis was off to the lobby. The Olsons focused their attention on the movie trailers, now playing on the screen. Chad's phone lay in his lap, the light no longer on. When Curtis returned, he took the popcorn bucket from Vivian and sat back in his chair. He leaned forward again, his face to the back of Chad's chair. According to Nicole, Curtis said something to the effect of, "I see you put your phone away now that I went to get management." Nicole would later say that she and Chad were confused, asking themselves why the conversation was continuing. Vivian recalled Chad using brash words when Curtis initiated the conversation again. "Who the fuck do you think you are?" she quoted in court. Nicole said she remembered her husband asked Curtis again, "What's your problem?" Chad then said he had been answering a message concerning his daughter. No big deal. But then the voices grew louder, and the tension started to build. Chad began to stand up and turn around. Nicole, watching her husband, instinctively turned slightly towards Chad, trying to calm the situation. He leaned over the back of his seat towards Curtis. Vivian said she became so frightened at this point, she moved down several seats, putting space between her and the argument. She turned away, not seeing what transpired next. Chad grabbed the bucket of popcorn out of Curtis's hands and threw it back at him. Nicole placed her hand on her husband's chest, trying to signal to him that it wasn't worth it and they should just try to watch the movie. Just then, the Reeves' son, Matthew, a Tampa police officer, arrived. He made his way up the steps of the theater looking for his parents, while casually glancing back to watch the movie trailers, which were now playing. He had stopped for a few seconds to scan the room, still looking for his parents' seats, when he saw two silhouette figures towards the top rows of the theater. This would be his father, Curtis, and Chad Olson. He heard his father's voice cry out, "Get off of me." He later recalled the moment in court.
"When you heard your father's voice cry out, did you turn to look?"
"Yes."
"All right. And what area did you look in?"
"Up into the middle back section."
"Now, at that point, were the previews playing or were they still off?"
"They were off."
"And what were the lighting conditions?"
"Not at that point, it was nearly pitch black, so..."
"Now, when you looked back into the back row, did you see anything?"
"Initially, no."
"Okay. So did you see anybody standing, for instance?"
"Not at the initial, when I initially looked. I couldn't. It was too dark."
"That's what we're talking about now. Now, at some point, do you start moving towards that voice?"
"Yes."
"When do you do that?"
"I had started stepping up the steps while looking up into the back area."
"When you heard the voice, you said it alarmed you. Did that cause you now to go towards where you heard it or not?"
"I had worked my way up the stairs. This was all happening."
Moments later, a shot rang out, and one of the silhouette figures fell to the ground. Nicole Olson started to feel a sharp burning sensation in her hand as she watched Chad slowly back away and collapse to the floor. She recalled seeing Chad's eyes glaze over and telling him, "Chad, we need you. Please hang in there. We need you." An off-duty sheriff's deputy who had been seated to watch the movie ran over and removed the gun from Curtis's hands. Nicole, with her hand in incredible amounts of pain, attempted to call her mom and Chad's mom to let them know something terrible had just occurred. She was so shaken that a bystander took the phone from her and began to talk to her relatives on her behalf. Vivian Reeves, who had turned away from the conflict, would look back over to her husband. Curtis's hands were now cradling his head. Chad's phone lay between his feet. Popcorn was everywhere. Their son Matthew rushed up the flight of stairs. He later told a court that his years of training as a Tampa police officer prepared him well for situations like this. He immediately rushed, not to his parents, but to the aid of Chad Olson.
And why did you do that? Why did you go to Mr. Olson?
I was able to put the scene together in my training and other things. I knew what had occurred due to the series of things that I heard. So at that point, I went straight to Mr. Olson.
And when we say you knew what occurred, based on your training, are you talking about, A, you heard a gunshot?
Yes.
And then, B, you saw a silhouette that was standing, now not standing. Do you agree with that or no?
Well, they were still standing at that time.
But they were moving away?
Yes, sir.
And so for that reason, you wanted to check on the person that was a silhouette that you later found out was Mr. Olson to try to help them if they were actually shot?
Yes, sir.
He began to remove Chad's shirt. There was a bullet wound in his chest. He applied pressure, trying to stop the bleeding. A woman approached him and identified herself as a registered nurse. She had been watching the trailers when the events unfolded. She took over applying pressure to Chad's wounds. Matthew then made his way over to his parents, covered in blood. The lights of the theater were slowly starting to brighten. He recalled seeing his father, disheveled, his glasses sitting crooked on his face. He made his way further down the aisle towards his mother.
Now, at some point, do you see your son in the theater?
Yes, but it... Yes, I did. Okay. Coming down our... I think he was in our row.
All right. And does he take you out of the theater?
Not then. He had blood on his hands and his gloves.
And so did he leave and come back?
Yes. He said, let me get cleaned up.
Vivian sat in the lobby of the theater as she watched first responders rush inside, while confused moviegoers were quickly ushered out of the building. She said she was completely in shock. Curtis, her beloved husband, father of their two children, a longtime police captain who trained other officers as a firearms coordinator, who graduated second in his class at the U.S. Army's Sniper School, and who was former director of security for Busch Gardens, had now shot somebody in a crowded theater. In his two-decades-long career in law enforcement, Vivian said he had never shot anybody. As medics were attempting to stop Chad's bleeding, Nicole was finally able to evaluate her hand. Her ring finger was nearly severed. Before the shot rang out, she had instinctively placed her left hand on Chad's chest in a bid to grab his attention and to try to de-escalate the situation. Curtis had pulled the trigger of his gun, and the bullet, intended for Chad, went through her hand and entered his chest. Both Nicole and Chad were airlifted to Tampa General Hospital. Chad died that afternoon on Monday, January 13th, 2014. He had spent the previous 20 years in Florida and had spent the last 7 building a life with Nicole and their young daughter. According to his obituary and interviews with close friends, he was an avid bike rider and motocross enthusiast. He loved boating and spending time with his family. He died at the age of 43. Curtis Reeves was taken into custody and charged with second-degree homicide for the killing of Chad Olson and aggravated assault for shooting Nicole Olson in the hand. He was facing 25 years in prison and was held without bond. Nicole was taken into surgery later in the week to repair her hand. Bone from her wrist was needed to replace the shattered bone of her ring finger. Curtis appeared in court the next day, on January 14th. His hired attorney, Richard Escobar, told the circuit court judge that Chad was the aggressor, and his client had no other choice but to defend himself, and therefore deserved to have a bond set. He tried to invoke Florida's Stand Your Ground law that was enacted in 2005 and became front page news after the death of Florida teenager Trayvon Martin in 2012. According to the statute, a person is justified in shooting another person if one of the following guidelines are met. If the person believes such force is necessary to prevent imminent death or great bodily harm, if the person acts in defense of one's home, dwelling, or residence under the presumption of fear, death, or bodily harm, or if the person does not have the ability to retreat if they believe death or bodily harm is imminent. As the court continued debating over Curtis's potential bond, prosecutors threw new revelations into the mix. This was not the first time, nor the second time, that Curtis Reeves confronted a moviegoer in their seat. This, they argued, was a sign of a pattern of harassment. Circuit Court Judge Lynn Tepper said there was no evidence to support the argument that the shooter was the victim in this case, and she therefore denied Curtis's bond. Don't you just love that sound? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business. So upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. And I love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Shopify powers millions of businesses, from first sale to full scale. You can reach customers online and across social networks with their ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. You know, everywhere you want to be. You can also synchronize your online and in-person sales and gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. Discover your possible. Shopify unlocks the opportunity of your business to more people every day. Every 28 seconds, an entrepreneur like you makes their first sale on Shopify. Go to shopify.com/courtjunkie, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/courtjunkie right now. shopify.com/courtjunkie. Paying down old credit card debt can be really stressful, especially when you're trying to keep track of a bunch of monthly payments that are all due on different dates. Consolidating with a personal loan could be your solution. Loans typically have fixed monthly payments and lower interest rates than credit cards. So if you think that sounds like a better plan, then Credit Karma can help you find the best option for you. Here's how it works. Credit Karma uses your credit data to find loan offers that are personalized to you, so you can have a better idea of what loan amount you can get approved for. Credit Karma will even show you your chances of approval, so you can choose between loan offers that you're more likely to get approved for and apply with more confidence. Comparing loan offers on Credit Karma is 100% free, won't affect your credit scores, and could save you money. Ready to apply? Head on over to creditkarma.com/loan offers to see personalized offers. Go to creditkarma.com/loan offers to find the loan for you. That's creditkarma.com/loan offers. Word traveled fast about the shooting at the Cobb Theater in Wesley Chapel, Florida. The incident was nearly 18 months after the horrific Aurora, Colorado shooting that left 12 dead during a showing of The Dark Knight Rises. The wounds and fear from that event were still very fresh on the minds of the country, and news of yet another theater shooting spread like wildfire. On the night of January 13th, while watching the evening news, Michael and Jamira Dixon saw the events of the shooting recounted. Splashed across the scene was Curtis Reeves' mugshot. They looked at each other instantly, recognizing the man in the photo in detail. both remembering an incident from the month before that made them quickly call authorities. The next evening, on January 14th, police arrived at the Dixon residence to take their statements. According to the Dixons, on December 28th, 2013, less than a month before the shooting of Chad Olson, they too were seated in the Cobb Theater for a matinee movie showing when they encountered a confrontational Curtis Reeves. The movie was set to begin, and the couple had brought with them their three kids and a niece. The Tampa Bay Times reported that Jamira had her phone on silent to text, but that the light bothered Curtis, who sat nearby.
He gets up. He's like, "Can you do me a favor? Can you please just stop texting?"
Curtis went to get an usher, and the usher told Jamira to put her phone away. But Jamira said Curtis kept glaring at her, and at one point, he even followed her to the restroom. He told a man in front of him to put his phone away as well. Jamira felt like he was trying to be the referee of the movie theater. Her 9-year-old son, who was shifting in his seat from time to time, also started to get on Curtis's nerves. "It was disgusting the way he acted," Michael Dixon said. "It's like he was looking to start a confrontation." When Jamira saw the news about the January 13th shooting, she knew she needed to call someone because she said, "That could have been us." Another person would later come forward and say they too had a less than pleasant encounter with Curtis. Edward Thompson recalled that he was on a date in a local theater near Wesley Chapel, Florida in 2006, 8 years prior. The two were talking quietly in the back row when an agitated Curtis began to bother them. Speaking with ABC Action News, Edward Thompson recalled, "He was sitting in the seat and he turns like this and looks back towards us and he says, 'Why don't you shut up?'"
How many times had this happened to other people that never said anything? Didn't remember it, didn't pay any attention to it.
When Edward asked Curtis to move seats, he recalled him saying, "This is my seat and I said, shut up." Both the Dixons and Edward Thompson reached out to the court to offer their help on the case as witnesses. Neither were ever called to the stand. The defense team pushed back against the bond denial, and Curtis continued to claim self-defense. This led to a 2-day bail hearing in February 2014. Video from the theater was shown, as well as tapes from Curtis speaking with detectives after the shooting. He told them, "As soon as I pulled the trigger, I said, 'Oh, this is stupid. There's no justification for what happened in there. If I had to do it over again, it would have never happened. We would have moved.'" Curtis also added, while speaking with detectives, that Chad had hit him. Video from a police patrol car was shown in court, where Curtis stated, "Suddenly, he's virtually on top of me. I reach in my pocket. I'm stretched out, trying to get away from him. I'm either saying, 'No, no, no,' or 'Whoa, whoa, whoa.' Suddenly, my head was to the right. He hit me with his fist or something. I assume it was his fist. I was kind of dazed. Had to be from the strike. I felt like I had something in my eye. Still do." Witnesses in the theater denied Curtis's claim that he was hit in the face by Chad. They recounted that only popcorn was thrown. On February 7th, Circuit Judge Pat Siracusa ruled that Curtis would not be granted bail and would remain in jail until the trial began. But on Friday, July 11th, almost 6 months after the shooting, Curtis was released on a $150,000 bail. He had been in custody since the shooting in January until an appeals court issued a ruling that he would be allowed bail. Although he was free to go home, the judge ordered that he would need to remain under house arrest, only leaving for necessary trips to doctor's appointments, the grocery store, and church. He would also need to surrender any firearms that he owned. TJ Grimaldi, who served as Nicole Olson's lawyer at the time, labeled Curtis a danger to the public. "This man, who ripped a family apart and tore them to pieces, is now able to be home in his own bed, see his family, see his son and his grandkids, he said. Grimaldi even spoke of the toll it was taking on the Olsen's daughter, who was 2 at the time. He told ABC News, "She understands Daddy isn't home. She asks for Daddy and he doesn't show up. It's almost a good thing that she's so young because she doesn't quite comprehend where Daddy is." Everyone waited for a trial date to be set. Curtis's defense team still argued that their client acted completely in self-defense, and they made their intentions known that they would try to implement the Stand Your Ground law. Representatives for the Olsons insisted that there was no way a court could find Curtis not guilty. In January of 2016, Nicole filed a lawsuit against Cobb Theaters, claiming they had no procedures to enforce their no weapons policy. The suit would also call for better employee training and money for the family's estate. It also named Thomas Peck, customer service employee at Cobb Theater, in the suit. Peck was the employee Curtis allegedly spoke to right before the situation turned deadly that night. The lawsuit was later settled out of court for an undisclosed amount. More than 2 years would come and go, still no trial. By July of 2016, even the media began to question why the case was taking so long. The judge had finally set a date for February 20th, 2017, for opening statements, but whether the date would stand was still in question. The defense argued that the case was taking as long as it needed to. They weren't in any rush. In the meantime, Curtis was back home, seemingly comfortable amongst family. Nicole's team argued that the delays were only benefiting Curtis. While the case dragged on, she remained a single mother, with no husband and no justice. Another factor that contributed to the delays was the immense witness list. More than 170 people may have had information relevant to the case. Defense attorney Richard Escobar chose to depose all of them, causing severe delays. The witness list would eventually be cut down substantially. The prosecutor, Glenn Martin, had inherited the case from former assistant state attorney Bill Lowry in the summer of 2015. According to the Tampa Bay Times, Martin estimated that the transition time to be able to familiarize himself with the case easily added 6 months to the process. The hearing to see if the Stand Your Ground law could be used by Curtis in his defense began on February 20th, 2017. The defense team called all the important players to the stand to try to paint the picture that Curtis acted out of self-defense and fear. They also claimed that it was Chad who had committed a felony against Curtis when he allegedly threw his phone at him. They claimed Chad's phone could have weighed as much as 6 ounces, which in the defense's eyes could be categorized as a deadly weapon. The prosecution said that Curtis provoked the entire confrontation, had numerous opportunities to de-escalate or end the situation, and had no argument to stand on for self-defense. Witness testimony would also not corroborate that Chad intentionally threw his phone, only the bucket of popcorn. Curtis took the stand himself to recount the incident in his own words. He recounted for the judge the moment he noticed Chad's phone.
As the previews came on, I noticed a gentleman that was sitting in front of my wife had a cell phone out, and it was kind of shining in my face.
The light from the cell phone was shining in your face?
Yes, sir.
Were the previews on at this point in time?
I believe it was. Yes, it was a previews, yes.
And were you trying to watch the previews?
Yes, sir.
And were the previews of interest to you?
We always like to see what the previews are so we know if we want to go see the movie or not. So, yeah, we always watch that.
Curtis testified about an agitated and combative Chad Olson.
After, 15, 20, 30 seconds, I leaned over to the gentleman and I said, my voice was low. And I said, "Sir, can I get you to put your cell phone away?"
And was there a response to that?
The response was F off or get the F out of my face.
Did you respond to that that statement by this individual?
I got away from him. Oh, I didn't say anything, no, sir.
That was the extent of your...
That was it. No, sir, I got back in my seat.
You got back in your seat. Now what did you do?
Well, I watched his wife reach over. I now know that it was his wife. She reached over, and it looks like she's trying to talk to him. And so I just kind of stayed back and stayed out of the way to see what would happen.
He said he instantly felt uneasy about him.
And what did you do again?
I was thinking that he would put it away. He'd been, I had requested it. And so I waited probably, I don't know, maybe close to a minute, half a minute, three quarters of a minute, something like that. And it was still there.
According to Curtis, Chad once again appeared to use his phone. And so Curtis decided to take matters into his own hands, this time threatening to go get a manager.
The cell phone is still there. And so I lean over and I'm not belligerent. I'm quiet. I don't need to wake up the whole theater. And I tell him that you leave me no alternative other than to notify the theater management. And
where does he respond to that?
Almost immediately.
What did he say?
I don't give the F what you do.
And so what did you do now?
Well, I sat back and I thought he would put it away then. And it was still there. I get up to leave. And as I'm leaving, my wife says, why don't we just move? And I said, I'll be right back. And I gave her my popcorn box that I was holding. We had split the popcorn. She had a bag and I had the bag. So I gave her my bag and I walked down the aisle and went down to the manager's office.
Curtis's story was different from the video surveillance shown during the hearing. He engaged Chad several times and didn't appear, in the words of the judge, as frightened as he was now while on the stand. After returning to his seat and noticing Chad's phone had been put away, Curtis said he then leaned over and apologized to Chad for involving management.
As I'm walking down the aisle, he looked at me. I guess you could say it was a stare, perhaps. So as I went past, as a goodwill gesture, I told him that I didn't see his phone at that time. So I said, I see you're not on your phone. Sorry, I involved theater management. It may not have been those exact words, but that's what it was.
Okay. And then what did you do?
I took my popcorn bag and sat down next to my wife.
You took your popcorn bag from your wife and sat down?
Yes, sir.
Now what happened?
I hadn't been sat down any time at all, and I see that he and his wife are now interacting again. And she's got both hands on him, on his left arm this time. And he jumps up. I say jumped up. He stands up very quickly. And he swings around and faces my wife, where my wife is sitting. He's directly in front of her. He's just before or just as he stood up, I heard something about theater manager. But I think it was in a conversation with his wife. It was very loud. So I think he was just being loud.
So now what?
His motion and swinging around got my eye. He's right off to my right here, caught my eye almost immediately. When I looked up, he was coming over the seat at me, across the front of where my wife was. I saw just a snapshot of something dark in his hand. Almost immediately, I saw what I perceived to be a glow from a screen right in front of my face, and I was hit in the face.
Curtis said things really escalated, and he thought Chad was going to harm his wife, Vivian, when he leaned over the back of the seat. Then Curtis told the court It became a situation of life or death.
At some point in between when I was first struck and in that incident right there, I realized that I was in a life or death struggle. That all of a sudden, he was no longer a loudmouth. He was now a very definite threat. At some point in time, because of the position that I was in, I reached for my pistol.
Curtis said Chad continued to move closer to him and that he had to act on the imminent threat.
He was reaching for me.
And so what did you have to do as he was reaching for you?
When I realized that he had gotten much closer and that he was, I guess there's a thing where you see somebody getting ready to set up to punch you. And he was getting ready to punch me, and I perceived that at some point, and that's when the pistol came out.
And what did you do with that pistol?
I shot him.
Did you want to shoot him?
Absolutely not.
Well, why did you shoot him?
Well, at that point, it was his life or mine.
When asked if he firmly believed that Chad was going to harm him, Curtis became emotional and said, no question about it. 2 weeks after the Stand Your Ground hearing began, the motion was denied by the judge, and Curtis would now finally be headed for a trial. The judge had pored over the infrared video of the theater and had even visited the location herself. This situation, she concluded, did not fit the criteria for the law. Her statement said, in addition to the video evidence and testimony that directly contradicted the defendant's testimony, other facts tended to show that he was not in fear of great bodily harm or death. She continued, saying, his conduct demonstrated that he was not afraid of the alleged victim. The defendant initiated contact with the alleged victim on at least 3 occasions, and was not concerned about leaving his wife there alone when he went to talk to the manager. As he was trained extensively in handling firearms and dealing with conflict situations, he was far better prepared than the average person to deal with situations such as this one. Curtis's attorneys tried and failed to appeal the decision. But in May of 2017, another wrench would be thrown into the process. The state of Florida was rethinking the verbiage of the Stand Your Ground law. Both the House and Senate decided they wanted the burden of proof in the law to switch from defendants to prosecutors. This meant, according to Fox 13 News in Tampa Bay, that during the original hearing, Reeves's attorneys had to approve he was in fear for his life when he shot and killed Chad Olson, a claim denied by the judge. Now, if this new version passed, the law would require that the prosecution had to prove that Curtis was not in fear for his life, but instead had shot Chad anyway, in order for a murder trial to proceed. This would mean that Curtis could get a second chance to declare himself protected under the Stand Your Ground law, and the trial was delayed again, as all eyes were on the Florida Supreme Court. Near the end of 2019, a decision was made. The language of the Stand Your Ground law would be changed, but this didn't spell victory for Curtis Reeves. As part of their decision, the Florida Supreme Court decided that the changes made to the law in 2019 would not apply to cases that were decided in the years prior. This was the final hurdle, or so everyone thought, until the year 2020 rolled around and the coronavirus hit. Curtis's trial was supposed to begin in October 2020, then it was moved to April 2021, and finally to February 2022. And so it would be 8 whole years after the incident that took Chad Olson's life and shattered a community. Curtis Reeves was now 79 years old. 6 jurors were chosen, 4 men and 2 women. These were the people now in charge of deciding if he had acted in self-defense when he shot and killed Chad Olson. The prosecution's opening statement, given by State Attorney Scott Rosenmosser, focused on pleading with the jury to look at the rules of self-defense and the evidence at hand to make their decision. He said Curtis outmatched Chad, and now what they needed to decide was if throwing a bucket of popcorn constituted killing him. The defense statement given by public defender Dino Michaels argued that Curtis carrying a loaded gun was something that many former law enforcement personnel did for their own safety. He was aging, getting more frail, and with his years of police training, evaluated the altercation with Chad to the best of his abilities. It's not an altercation over popcorn, Michaels argued. It was a blatant attack on Curtis. The defense called into question the mishandling of evidence in the case from the start. They argued that the investigator's main goal in responding to the incident on January 13th was to arrest Curtis, not get the complete story. They said that 8 years ago, after his arrest, Curtis told detectives that Chad hit him, not with a popcorn bucket, but with his fist or his phone. They claimed that since Chad's phone landed at Curtis's feet, it was an obvious weapon that needed to be handled with care during evidence collection. Chad's phone was tested for DNA, but Curtis's DNA wasn't found on it at all, putting a dent into the defense's argument that it had been used as a weapon on him. Then the prosecution called lead detective Alan Proctor to the witness stand. He told the jury that physical evidence showed that Curtis was the only aggressor in the situation, and that Chad was just responding to the hostility. But then there was cross-examination. Defense attorney Richard Escobar immediately went to work grilling Detective Proctor, specifically about Chad's phone.
And if Mr. Reeves is telling you that, hey, I think I may have been hit with either a fist or a phone, that phone becomes paramount in this investigation, right?
It's important, yes, sir.
Very important, would you agree?
It's important, sir, yes, sir.
Is it not very important?
Everything is important, sir.
Escobar accused Detective Proctor of mismanaging the crime scene. He referred to it as sloppy police work.
But the reason that you didn't do these things is because at that point in time, you did not have the experience in dealing with a self-defense case.
I had limited experience with that. Yes, sir.
It was definitely a blow to the prosecution. The evidence that before so clearly seemed to indicate that Curtis was guilty was now cast in doubt because a lead detective just admitted inexperience. But would it be enough for the defense to get an acquittal? 8 years after the incident, Nicole Olson and Vivian Reeves also took the stand once again. Both women had lived what seemed to be a whole other lifetime since what happened on January 13th, 2014. They recalled the events that had haunted their lives for almost a decade, but now did it with stoic calmness. When the jury broke away for deliberations on February 25th, 2022, they only took 3 hours. 3 hours to decide the fate of a man who had been awaiting his day in court for 8 years. 3 hours for the family that had hung on by a thread after losing a husband and a father. The verdicts were read aloud to the packed courtroom. The jury found Curtis not guilty on both counts of second-degree murder in the death of Chad Olson and aggravated assault on Nicole Olson. Curtis would be going home a free man. The Reeves family burst into tears and began hugging one another in celebration. Curtis would finally be free. But across the room, Nicole Olson broke into tears. Her family swiftly escorted her away from the courtroom. It was over. On March 8, 2022, Curtis sat down for a full interview with Fox 13 Tampa Bay, a station that had followed the case since the very beginning. He said adjusting back to normal life was going to take time, but he was happy to finally be able to move on. He told the Fox 13 reporter that if people based their opinion of him off of the media, they simply didn't have the full story.
What do you want people to know about Curtis Reeves?
That I'm just like they are. I just want to be left alone in our society. I want to have fun. I want to stay safe, and I want my family to be safe.
And what's the lesson learned in all this?
I'm not sure there is a lesson. I think our society has become a hostile society, and I think that we need to get back to respecting each other.
Can you say that again? Talk about what the lesson is.
We need to get people back to respecting each other and understanding that we're all individuals, but we're still people.
He said the world has become too hostile in recent years, that people need to learn tolerance.
Yeah, I think we got too much violence in our society. We need to understand that we can have different opinions without being hostile about it. It's just an opinion. We need to be tolerant of each other. And we're all in this together. There's no reason for the hostility that we're seeing. There's no need for people flying off the handle and attacking other people and stuff like this here. It's not something that our society needs.
He ended the interview by saying he'll be spending the next few years attempting to make up for lost time with his wife. He said that during the duration of his house arrest and trial, Vivian expressed all the normalities of life she wanted to enjoy once this was all over. Nicole Olson also spoke out months after the trial, this time with her now 10-year-old daughter by her side.
For the last 8 years, I've just been fighting to get through it. And now I'm at a point where I'm ready to truly move on and take a step forward and put it behind me. You know, it wasn't the outcome that I wanted or expected or in a million years thought would happen, but it did.
She said she and her daughter are focusing on moving forward.
Priorities have shifted. You know, I was a new parent then trying to figure things out. I think I've gained a lot of focus, you know, on where I want to be and how I want to raise my daughter. Also, just for myself, kind of what's important in life. You know, I always thought I just need that closure. I need the closure. I need the trial behind me and I need him in jail. And that didn't happen. But what am I supposed to do? You know, I can't dwell on it. I can't continue to let it bring me down. I want to be an example to her and show her, right?
Yeah.
That we're tough girls, we're strong girls, and that we're going to make something right that was wrong, right?
Yeah.
And help others, because we've had so many people help us along the way, right? We have, so.
And that's all for this episode. As always, I want to know what you think about this case. You can let me know by joining the conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, by tweeting me at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. Today's episode was researched and written by Law and Crime staff. To hear these episodes without the ads or to hear additional Court Junkie bonus episodes, check out my Patreon options at courtjunkie.com/support. Thanks again for listening. Until next time. Court Junkie is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, Court Junkies, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you, fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself. And join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.